Penguin Random House Audio presents Why Flying is Miserable and How to Fix It by Ganesh Sitaraman. Read for you by Chris Henry Coffey. Introduction. Flying is a miracle. For most of human history, it seemed like an impossible dream. But today, we take for granted that we can have breakfast in Chicago and dinner in Los Angeles, or see family across the country during Thanksgiving. We can conduct business anywhere. We can visit all the wonders of the world. But flying is also miserable. Tens of thousands of flights are delayed and canceled each year. As a result, we've missed weddings, had our vacations shortened, lost time with friends, and skipped important meetings. When flights are on time, we pay extra to check our bags and then worry about their getting lost. The overhead bin space seems to shrink every year, just like the amount of legroom. Delays might mean hours sitting on the tarmac, wishing for a drink of water or a snack or a chance to run to the bathroom. Or they can mean missing a tight connection and being stranded in an unfamiliar city. For those in cities with small airports or in airports dominated by one big airline, minimal competition means higher ticket prices. For others, flying is a challenge because the airlines don't serve their city. And all of us struggle to navigate the dizzying array of airline statuses and hierarchies, credit card perks, and point systems. And that's just the passenger experience. Zooming out, the airline industry faces a great deal of, well, turbulence. That turbulence has huge impacts on the country, cities, workers, and the economy. Consider these dynamics. Airlines have gone bankrupt over and over again, and in recent years, merged over and over again. There are now only four big U.S. carriers: Delta, American, United, and Southwest. The big four have large shareholders in common, which economists have shown raises prices for passengers. In the years before the COVID-19 pandemic, the airlines made record profits. But when the pandemic hit in 2020, they needed a huge public rescue, their second in 20 years. In 2022 alone, more than 180,000 flights were canceled. Some were because of the Southwest Airlines debacle during the December holidays, but many others were a function of staff shortages or extreme weather at major hub airports. Pilots, flight attendants, and other airline employees are often overworked to the point of exhaustion. Meanwhile, unruly travelers are an increasing problem. Airlines are now reducing service from major cities like Toledo, Ohio, and Dubuque, Iowa. In smaller markets like Cheyenne, the state capital of Wyoming, city leaders have even agreed to pay the airlines to offer service because, despite making profits, airlines refuse to fly there without a revenue guarantee. The miseries of flying and the turbulence in the industry aren't inevitable, and they aren't simply the result of a pandemic, nor is this a simple story of corporate mismanagement. As varied as these problems are, they stem from a single source: public policy. We make choices as a country, through our elected representatives, about how best to govern our economy. We choose to have rules to ensure that food doesn't have bacteria in it, that our rivers and lakes aren't polluted, that toasters and cars and children's toys are safe. We choose to have a whole set of laws so banks can get chartered, offer loans, and hold our money safely with a federal insurance system in case the bank goes under. We choose to have electricity networks that bring power and light to the country. And we choose to have rules to make sure electricity is affordable so everyone can get service. In all these areas and more, we have historically chosen a regime of regulated capitalism that has enabled a thriving economy, but one with guardrails to make sure that the dynamics of the market don't lead to destructive harms. Businesses follow the rules we set, and we hold them accountable when they violate the rules. The key question for air travel, or anything else, is simple. What rules should we choose? Since the Wright brothers first took flight at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina in 1903, the United States has tried three different approaches for governing air travel. During the infancy of flight, the federal government promoted the creation and growth of airlines largely through subsidies. Once airlines were established, fierce competition led to industry chaos. Congress then adopted the second approach. It took a page from the American tradition of regulated capitalism and brought airlines under a system of governance akin to other transportation industries. The American tradition of regulated capitalism was built on the understanding that some sectors of the economy were not like others. Sectors like transportation, communications, energy, and banking were often network-like. They had tendencies to become monopolies or oligopolies, and they could place extraordinary power in the hands of a small number of people and firms. Because of these dynamics, competition wouldn't work in those areas. There would either be chaos or concentration. One solution is to nationalize businesses in these sectors. Indeed, some countries have nationalized publicly run airlines, trains, banks, telephone systems, and electricity utilities. But the American way was different. Instead of nationalization, these sectors were regulated as public utilities. Public utilities are essential infrastructure, critical for commerce, social life, and national security. Reliability and stability are paramount. From 1938 to 1978, air travel was governed under this regime. The American tradition offered a system of structural regulations that together achieved a variety of national goals. The system was designed to serve small and mid-sized communities, to prevent airline bankruptcies and bailouts, to ensure airports wouldn't be dominated by one airline, to avoid monopolization and predation, and to maintain stable, reliable service at all times. It did this through a set of rules that included the regulation of prices, routes, and entry into the airline business. During this period, a relatively small number of highly regulated big airlines dominated the market. The legal system ensured that the airlines offered high-quality service throughout the country and prevented the abuses that naturally come with limited competition. It was an age of regulated oligopoly. In the 1970s, this system came under pressure from left and right, leading to the Airline Deregulation Act of 1978 and a third approach to governance. Advocates for deregulation thought air travel was not a special sector, akin to a public utility. They saw airlines as an ordinary market service, like selling sofas or running a convenience store, and they wanted to let the marketplace work. By eliminating structural regulation, anyone with resources could start an airline, or so they said, and airlines could pick their routes and set their prices. Increased competition would lead to cheaper flights. Advocates didn't think that deregulation would have negative effects on small or mid-sized communities, or that it would lead to concentration into a tiny number of dominant airlines. They even claimed that after deregulation, there could be up to 200 airlines operating efficiently. At first, the deregulators looked as if they had been right. Opening up competition led immediately to a rush of new entrants, lower prices, and fare wars in the early 1980s. But by the end of the decade, the airline industry was in crisis. Bankruptcies, low profits, higher prices in some markets, labor management conflicts, a worsening flight experience, increased congestion. Leading advocates admitted that they had misunderstood that airline markets are monopolistic or oligopolistic, that they didn't realize how important scale was to the airline business, and that they didn't foresee many of these ill effects. Some politicians even apologized for deregulation. And the four biggest airlines ended up with an even larger share of the market than before, but now without the duties or restraints of the regulated era. Airlines had become an unregulated oligopoly. We have now lived under this system for more than 40 years. In that time, there have been 189 bankruptcy filings in the industry, major carriers have shifted pension obligations to the government, The number
sample complete. Ready to continue?